You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, my name is David Bryan, and this is Curiosity Invited, a podcast inspired by endless curiosity. Tune in for an open-minded conversation about interesting and important things. Well, welcome to Curiosity Invited. My name is David Bryan, and I am thrilled today to be speaking to an extraordinary human being and actually a good friend, Brent Green. And Brent, welcome, and thanks for doing this. I really appreciate it. So you are in Los Angeles. And I know you've been, how long have you been? Oh, let me do a little bit of a bio, but all I have is a little bit of a bio.
Okay.
So Brent is by training a horticulturist and a landscape designer. And Brent has been, he'll tell us more about that, but Brent's been the proprietor of Green Art Landscape Designs. Brent Green, Green Art Landscape Designs. Folks can see the picture. And that's located in Los Angeles. And how long have you been doing that?
I've been doing this now for 29 years.
29 years Green Art Landscape or 29 years working in landscape design?
So 29 years Green Art Landscape.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Yeah. Okay, so fill in this picture. You grew up in Los Angeles.
I did. I grew up in the Crenshaw District. I was born in an area called Leimert Park in 1968. And for some strange, it's a largely African-American community. At that time, very stable community, wonderful families, tree-lined streets, safe. And for some reason, I really got into growing plants. My grandmother, my mother's mother, lived in Dallas, Texas, and she would come out and garden with me. She was an avid gardener, and I was like 6 years old and would start gardening.
And is that where you think you sort of got the bug?
Oh yeah, I know it is. I know it
and
is.
And was anybody else in your family? Like do you have siblings?
I do. I lost an older brother in 2009. Yeah. I have a younger brother, 7 years younger than I am. So I'm the middle of three boys.
And were they into plants? Were your parents into plants?
No. My dad's a retired judge. My mom's a homemaker. Parents just celebrated 59 years.
Fabulous.
Yeah, and they're older now, got a lot of stuff going on. But growing up in that neighborhood, I just was into plants and gardening. My grandmother came out when I was six, and I began planting tomatoes with her and that type of thing. She would come for about a month every summer when I was a little kid, and she was the type, she was such a gardener. She was amazed all the time of what we could grow here in LA. She's from Dallas, Texas.
Oh, yeah.
And they have these winters there, where they'd have to bring all the house plants inside and all that stuff. And so she had a greenhouse at her house, like a sunroom. And while she was here in LA, this is pre 9/11, obviously, she'd bring a pair of clippers with her on the plane and she'd bring a separate suitcase to actually put cuttings of stuff she would steal. She'd basically walk around my parents' neighborhood with clippers, cutting pieces of ivy and geraniums. And she'd fill the suitcase up and take it back to Dallas. And when I would go back to Dallas, everything that she had cut would be growing on her patio. She was a plant nut. She had plants everywhere.
And did she have a great garden, an amazing garden as well?
Amazing, amazing garden. She grew tons of stuff. And she was fascinated by, again, what we could grow here that she couldn't grow in Texas because of our temperate climate out here.
So yeah.
She was really fascinated by what we could grow.
So you had this early interest in plants, but it was more than an interest, right? It was kind of, was it bigger than that, or was it?
Well, here's what it was. After grandma left and went back to Texas, it was my job to tend these tomatoes that we had planted. And I would talk to her frequently by phone, and she would say, okay, we'll fertilize today and put this on them and, make sure you put stakes in them so that they don't drag the ground as they grow because they get heavy. She would always kind of advise me.
Yeah.
And I would, at that time, we had Encyclopedia Britannica. And so I started reading page by page of how to grow different stuff and the names of the plants and the origins and all this stuff. And I think the really cool thing is once the tomatoes became ripe, I could pick them and my mom made a salad for our dinner table with these tomatoes that I had grown. And I got all this you know, amazing.
That's great.
I guess accolades for doing it as a young kid.
Yeah.
It built this momentum. And so the following season, I wanted to grow other stuff. So she was like, okay, you can grow collard greens, you can grow peppers, you can grow, you know, and so I just started growing stuff. And that was what I did.
So you grew up, you went to college, you went wherever. Yeah. And studied, where'd you go?
Horticulture. I went to Cal Poly San Luis Obispo and majored in horticulture. In fact,
is it known for that? Is Cal Poly
it's actually
known?
one of the best schools for it. In fact, the way I did it, my father set me down my junior year. And he said, son, you've got to start applying to colleges and that type of thing. What do you think you want to do? And he just was listening to me. And I said, so I think I want to be a lawyer like you were, because you made a good living and our family took trips. We lived in a nice house, that kind of thing. He says, well, what about the plant thing? You spend all this time in the garden. You've done it since you were a little kid, and you even still do it. Like, you'll leave a sports, I'll leave a football game with a bunch of friends of mine, and I'd come home and garden. And I was teased for it. I used to get teased for it, because it wasn't the most prominent thing in the African-American community to have a little boy who wasn't playing sports. I mean, I would play sports with those guys, but I would always end up in the garden. And it was actually just an odd thing. I was the only kid in my neighborhood that did this. And so
was it infectious for other people? Like, did you ever get people like, I want to learn to do that? It was just you.
Brent was planting, and you know, I would leave these games of football with us where the teams were matched, and I'd be like, okay, I'm gonna leave in an hour, so let's get this going. In an hour, I'd be like, okay, time's up, I'm going home. And I would get yelled at and teased. Come on, man, why are you leaving the game? You know, man, playing with those flowers, you flower boy, you this, you that. I mean, I got called all this stuff. And I'd be like, whatever, y'all. And I'd leave. And eventually the whole group of kids would migrate down to my house where I was gardening, and they'd sit on the lawn and they'd just hang out, and we'd talk, and I'd garden. And for the next rest of the day, for like 5 hours, I would just garden. And people just knew me to be that guy. I mean, there were older women in the neighborhood that would drive by that I didn't know, but they'd drive by and they'd blow their horn and they'd say, that lawn is beautiful, baby. I wish my lawn could be that green. You're doing a great job. I'm always watching you out here, you know? And so it was interesting how much people noticed it, just because it wasn't to see a little kid with an afro in the 70s out in the yard. You know, every day, like in the summertime, I would be out there for at least 4 hours a day. And so I was very visible, and I loved it. I was really into it. And then, so back to your question, but you know, when I got ready to go to college, my dad sat me down and says, you know, what do you want to do? I said, I think I want to be a lawyer like you, because you made a great living. He said, what about something in gardening? I said, well, we've got a gardener, and he drives up in this beat up truck. Nice man, but I don't know that I can raise a family on that kind of income.
Wait a minute, you had a gardener in
Everybody here in LA has gardeners. You know, the guy that cuts your grass every week, put your trash cans out front. Mr. Perez was his name. He would come and do our yard. He did all the neighbors on our street.
What did he think about your garden?
Oh, he was great. I mean, he taught me stuff. He actually, you know, was very interested in the fact that I was interested in it. And so he would bring me seeds from different stuff in his yard, and I would grow those. And anybody that was into gardening that knew that I was into it, they kind of fed my passion for it. And it was very nice. It was nice.
So what'd your dad say? Your dad said, what about plants? What'd you say? No thanks.
Well, I don't know that I can make a living, you know, if I want to have a family and own a home one day. I literally was thinking about this. I said, I don't know that I can make a living at this. And my dad says, well, there's a whole profession out there. It's not just gardening. There's landscape design. I had never even thought about that, you know, and he says, get the Yellow Pages, no internet at the time, get the Yellow Pages, and look up landscape design. And I found two firms here in LA. One was Party and Fleming in Malibu, and I called and interviewed with them. And I took the RTD bus. I wasn't driving a car yet. Took the RTD bus out there, met this woman who worked there, real sweet woman. And she was amazed that I was this, you know, kid, into African-American kid. I think she was amazed that I just wanted to do this. And so she walks me around the firm. I asked a bunch of questions, and we end up in a meeting room where these, I guess, senior partners in this firm are brainstorming plants to put at Ronald Reagan's house, because they did a bunch of high-end properties in Bel Air and Brentwood and that kind of thing. And they were trying to find plants that, or a certain foliage color. Like, I think they were looking for burgundy foliage plants that took shade when they were stumped. They couldn't figure it out. So So I started rattling off the names of all this stuff. I was just like, I raised my hand and said, well, what about this, this, and this? And somebody's there with a book and she's looking and she's like, oh my God, that would work. That would work. Oh yeah, that would work too. Who is this kid? You know? And so, you know, they took a liking to me right away. And they told me, you know, to apply to Cal Poly, both Cal Polys, Cal Poly Pomona and Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, which I did. I applied to both and got into both and chose San Luis Obispo. Because at that time, it was one option to live at home with my parents and go to Pomona, or actually break away and go away and stay away for 4 years and go four hours north to San Luis. I took that option. That was
Get out of Dodge.
Get out of Dodge. Right. And it was great. I had an amazing time. And I think it was the first time that I really had a community of like-minded gardening, plant-loving people. So there's landscape design and ornamental horticulture. Horticulture is more the study of plants, growing plants, raising plants, how to deal with pathogens that affect plants, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. Landscape design is how do you design outdoor spaces, you know, with concrete, masonry, and plants included in that right. picture. Right. I thought I wanted to go into landscape design as a major, but I loved horticulture so much. I did horticulture with a landscape design concentration.
Got it.
And so my gig, as I saw it, for my future when I was in college, I wanted to come back to urban LA and green up as much of the city as I could, because I just thought that there were some areas of the city like Leimert Park where I grew up, and we moved to another area on the west side that was very leafy and green, but all of LA, most of LA wasn't that, especially communities of color.
Sure.
Had a very strong discrepancy, you know, of lack of greenery and that type of thing. And I just always felt that, you know, from a psychological standpoint, from an aesthetic standpoint, from a health standpoint, greenery in a community, you know, gave back a lot to that community. And
I'm listening. I'm also so curious about, was that a conscious thing in your mind that, you know, there is that the obvious love for plants that, you know, you obviously have the fascination with love for. But then there's this other piece that is it has an effect on people.
Sure.
Or they have an effect on people. And was that always up? I mean, you knew it had an effect on you. But was there an element of that in how you thought about what you were doing or what you were learning? Like, that's what I want to do? Or like, where'd that come from?
You know,
that piece.
I had this excitement, like literally. When I was a kid, I had teachers that had plants on their desk. And if I was good and made a good grade, I could go up and say, hey, thank you for my A. That was great. I want a piece of that philodendron on your desk. And she'd give me a snipping of it and I would grow it. And, you know, if I knew I was getting a cutting of something, I'd be so excited the night before as a little kid, I couldn't sleep. I was really into it. And then I think just the fact that so many of my parents' friends and, you know, people that visited our home were just so enamored with the garden, because my parents' garden was pretty ridiculous. I mean, it made the front page of the LA Times in the home section. Yeah. The garden did. And I mean, it was pretty spectacular because I put so much time into it, and it got a lot of attention. And the attention that it got fed my ego, I guess, because so many people were. And so I felt, I guess, internally, that I was doing some good work that made people notice, and it made people want to hang out in my parents' garden. I felt like I could do that for others. And so it was, you were asking me if it was a conscious effort to think about, you know, that aspect, that was a thing for me.
Yeah. So you get it, you get out, you graduate.
Yes.
And you immediately hang up your own shingle, or did you go work for somebody else to do it? Or, well, you know,
when I finished school, I came back to LA, and my parents' friends, my dad's a retired judge, a lot of his colleagues had been waiting for me to get out, because my parents threw these parties at their house in the garden, and they would be like, when's Brent getting out of school? You know, we need him at our house. We need him, you know, my wife would love this, or we just did a whole pool in the backyard and it needs Brent's touch, you know. So I came out of school and had a business by virtue of the fact that these people were waiting for me. And so I didn't really, once I got out of school, I didn't really work for anybody but me. I didn't even really know how to run a business. I just knew how to design, and I had to learn how to charge and that kind of thing. And I made a few mistakes along the way. My dad was great. He bailed me out of a couple of situations where I made no money. But I never didn't have the passion for what I was doing. I was really into just putting it together. And I always wanted to do it right. So even if I screwed up and didn't charge enough, I would always throw in a couple of extra plans if I knew it was going to make the job be complete, because it had to be complete. It had to be complete in my mind. Right. So I had to finish it. But those jobs actually gave me a lot of, I went and got my contractor's license and had my degree and had a little, I'm like Green. My last name is Green. I've got to come up with a name. So Green Art became my name. And so I had little Green Art signs popping up and all these, you know, African-American kind of affluent parts of the African-American community, like Baldwin Hills, Ladera Heights, View Park. Yeah. Where all the judges lived. And then those jobs, you know, got a lot of attention and I had a business. And so people began calling me with my number on the sign. And that's what happened. In fact, really interesting. There's a house that I did for a judge, Sherman Smith, who has since passed away. He would be well over 100 by now, older mentor to my dad. I did his house back in 1991. And I planted these little tiny palm trees, like 8 of them. And Michael Cooper, the ex-Laker, bought that house. And those palm trees are 80 feet tall now.
Wow.
And one of my clients who lives on his street knows him, Michael Cooper, and took me over there and introduced me to him. And I said, I'm the guy that planted your trees back in 1991. And he says to me, oh yeah, this is the reason I bought this house, these palm trees. My wife brought me here and I saw these 8 palm trees. I'm like, I want that house. And it made me feel so good that, you know, my well-placed Mexican palm palms made this Laker, ex-Laker, buy this house. So it was really cool.
You know, I was perusing your Instagram the other day, and I don't know if it's a recent planting or if that was an old picture I saw that you had just planted a Mexican or a Tijuana
Tipu tree.
Yep. Yes, Tijuana Tipu tree. Yeah, yeah, which you know, I had never heard of years back. And then this one place, the Ohio Foundation, right? Mm-hmm. Before it burned down, my last trip there, they planted this tree, you know, in my honor, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it was like, when I saw the pictures of what they become, those are massive. Beautiful and massive. And it's really, so... was that a recent planting or is that tree now beautiful and massive someplace?
You know what? That was a reason. So here's what I do. That's a great question.
I want to make sure to get to that piece of what you do, because that is, you know, to me, well, let's get there. Let's get there. So you're running this business.
Yes.
And then you know, you're going to have a family, you get married, you have a kid, whatever.
Yeah.
And so now where did you live? Where did you bought a house?
Well, I bought a house at 35. I started renting in an area called Mid-City, Los Angeles, when I was about 28 years old. And I was dating my ex-wife. I'm divorced now, but I have a 21-year-old daughter. We were renting in that neighborhood because it was cheap. A family friend had this upstairs, downstairs duplex that was huge. And I think our rent was like $650 a month, which was amazing, you know, for LA.
Yeah.
And we stayed there. And the neighborhood was rough. We had a murder in front of our place. I mean, it was, we had, hookers and a little bit of everything going on over there. But when you're 28 to save money, it's amazing what you'll brave, you know.
Yes,
and we stayed there for 7 years and, you know, got married, had our daughter and began, you know, saving some money. I was doing a lot of work, building Green Art, and I had some money saved and wanted to buy a house in LA and wanted to move to a nicer part of LA, but I couldn't really afford anything comfortably. I mean, I'd be house poor. And so I told my ex-wife at the time, I said, we should buy it right here in this neighborhood. I said, you know, it's a mile from the west side. The west side is always expensive. North of here is a nicer area. But if we buy in this pocket right here, that we can get a house for like 200 something grand. I mean, at that time, you know, we paid $288 for this little Spanish bungalow.
What year was that?
That was 2003. Mm-hmm. And bought that house. We had no street trees. It was a largely African-American and Latino community at that time, devoid of street trees. There weren't a lot of street trees. It was a lot of heat, middle of LA, near a freeway. Yeah. near a freeway, but it was all I could really afford comfortably. And I decided that once I got that house, my very first piece of property ever that was mine, I said, I'm gonna start planting trees on this. Well, first, I actually called the city of LA and tried to see if I could get trees provided by them. Couldn't get any action in that department. Called our council office, couldn't get any action in that department. And I got tired of waiting. And I said, you know what? I'm gonna plant 36 trees on my 36th birthday. And I went to some growers that I knew, and I got 36 trees, tipu trees. They were little tipu trees. I got 36 of them, and I lined my block with those 36 trees. So I basically
how big? I mean, little guys.
They were little. They were probably 6 feet tall.
6 feet.
Little skinny whips. And this guy sold them to me, I think at that time, for like $4 a piece or something.
Yeah.
Like that. So it wasn't that big of a monetary commitment, but I got them and I began knocking on my neighbors. I planted one in front of my house, and then I knocked on different neighbors' doors who I didn't know and said, hey, I'm that guy who bought the house over there. I'm planting trees. Well, they're like, well, how much? I'm like, don't worry about it. I'm just doing it, you know, because I want our neighborhood to be greener and better. It'll cut down on the heat island and all the pollution from the freeway. It'll make it a nice walkable street. And I got 35 people to commit to them. You know, then I had, you know, quite a few people that didn't want to do it. They're all, the city doesn't take care of anything. If we plant that tree, you know,
I'm going to get stuck with it. It's going to tear up my sidewalk,
my plumbing. And I had a litany of people that opposed it, but the 35 people that committed to it, that was great. I said, all I want you to do is water it, you know, soak it once a week. And that was that. And so for a year they grew, they're a pretty fast growing tree. They grew. And by the end of the first year, they really had grown to be beautiful, nice, you know, little trees that were coming in. And so I said, I'm going to do this again. So my 37th birthday, I knocked on doors. And this time I had no real problem getting 37 people to commit, because they were like, oh yeah, those are beautiful. Yeah. Give me a couple of those. Can you fit two out there? If not, just give me one. But yeah, I'm all for that. You know,
and did the neighbors do the planting, or was this all you?
This is all me. I mean, at that time I was 37 years old, had all this energy. I had a little muscle on me. I figured I could do this. The only job I wanted you people to do is commit to watering them. If you can water them, that'd be great. You know, and so I did that. So I did that second planting. Then I did a third planting. My block on Orange Drive where I live is a pretty long block. So those first 3 years, all the trees went on that street. So I planted tipu trees from Washington Boulevard south to the Santa Monica Freeway.
Wow.
And that is the first plantings I did. And I do them every year on my birthday. So I just turned 54 in January. I'm rounding up neighbors in my neighborhood on other streets to plant 54 trees in the neighborhood. But every year on my birthday, so I've planted over 1,000 trees in my neighborhood to date. And it literally has changed my neighborhood. In fact,
tell us about that piece. Because I mean, you know, driving to your house, so I've been there, I'm telling everybody, driving to your house, which we're definitely going to talk about your house afterwards, because people, and I, whether you have pictures, I pulled up your website so we can just show a little bit of that, but,
sure.
But,
I can get your picture,
but driving to your house, you know, it's a neighborhood, and it's not a particularly lovely neighborhood until you get to a certain place where it's like, whoa, this is like, it's like tree lined, lush. I mean, it feels and looks so different. It's like this, like you feel like you've been transported to some other place. And I mean, it's extraordinary, but I'm curious about, like, did it change it obviously changed the way the neighborhood looks and feels.
Yes.
Do you think it's changed how the neighbors are? Not all of them, obviously, because I know you have one next door neighbor. But we're not going there. No, we're not going there. but
everybody has one on their street.
Everybody's got one. Look, where I lived up in Boulder Creek, right? We had one too.
Oh yeah, that's just the law.
No matter what the number is, there's always one.
That was one.
So did it change do you think it changed the tone of things? Do you think it changed the way people took care of their houses? You know, they committed to watering. It was like, So say more. How did you notice that? How do you notice that?
Here's what I was very visible again. Now I had my own little plot of dirt to work on, my own house. So I was always out there in the yard. People would walk by, they'd chat me up for ideas for their own houses. And, you know, there was an older guy in my neighborhood. He's like, wow, every time I walk by here, you're doing so much. You make it look like Beverly Hills. Because I had palm trees and lighting and all this stuff. And I was like, well, you know, Beverly Hills is just a few miles that way. Like, why can't we look like Beverly Hills? Like, at the end of the day, the same stuff that grows there grows here. This is our best investment. You know, so he had me do his house. And then several other neighbors had me do their front yards. And it caught on like that. So it was not just the street trees, which were the most prominent things were the street trees. But now house by house, I think I've done on my block 9 houses date. And it's made such a difference, you know, and it does look like it's been very interesting to watch. I'm like the old guy on my block now. I've been in my house. It'll be 19 years in April. And I was this young, 35 year old starting out. And I was, holding block club meetings and planting these trees and doing all this. Sunset Magazine got wind of the tree planting and they did an article on me, a 5-page article on my home and on the tree planting as a bigger story. And then Channel 7 read that article. Somebody at Channel 7 did. They did a local piece. Then they did a piece on Sunday morning, the national news on me. So I got this national attention. They started calling me the urban Johnny Appleseed. That was what they came up with for me. And that's been my thing. And so I'll be out, having dinner with my daughter and somebody will say, you're that guy. I read about you. It's kind of funny how certain people just remember.
I know that story. I mean, the story of the Sunset Magazine and the news. I didn't know about the national coverage, but you would think, or I would think, it is such a profound experience, like driving to your place, and. Really, I mean, it's one of those, like, it takes your breath away. There's your house, which really takes your breath away. I mean, the house is the house, right? It's a little house and it's fixed up. I'm going to show a picture in a second, but it's the whole, the neighborhood. It's like, suddenly it's like, wow, what just happened here? Yeah. I would think that the city of Los Angeles would say, hey, wait a second. There's a clue here about what needs to happen. What could make this city a different city in so many different neighborhoods? And has anybody ever, from the city come knocking on your door saying, hey, we need your help here?
Well, absolutely. But here's what I've gotten during the time Villaraigosa was mayor, Antonio Villaraigosa.
Yeah.
Somebody called me from his office and they said, hi, are you Brent Green? I said, yes. They go, we hear you planted a bunch of trees in your area. And I was very proud about it. I said, I have. They go, we're from Antonio Villaraigosa's office. Then I went, did I get in trouble? Because I planted trees on this right away with no permission. Very guerrilla gardener. I did this. And I'm thinking, okay, am I in trouble? They're like, she's like, no, don't worry. We heard about you. We read about you in Sunset Magazine. The mayor wants to invite you down to his day of service and get a photograph with you and all that. So I went, got my suit on and went. That was cool. And then later, somebody locally in my neighborhood put my name in the hat to be a member of the CFAC. It's Community Forestry Advisory Council. It's a group of watchdog citizens from each council district in the city, which is, LA is a very large city. So I'm the representative of CD10, and we have meetings. They become Zoom meetings with COVID, but we have meetings twice a month at City Hall, and we talk about, tree care in our areas. We try to, there's the city urban forester is there, and we try to highlight certain things in our area that need to be done. Like for me, I wanted to get all the trees trimmed on a street called Adams. The trees were really hanging low, and some of the shop owners there were starting to really, butcher these trees because they were blocking their signage. I said, can we get some city money there? Can the city come and trim these trees? So I got that done. But it's kind of like we're the watchdog for these communities to try to elevate the whole urban tree canopy here in Los Angeles. It's interesting because we do a lot of work because we're passionate about it, but bureaucracy doesn't always I mean, their intentions are good, but the follow through doesn't always happen. Right. You have to really kind of like bark and make it happen. I mean, in a city the size of Los Angeles, with the population that it has and just the square miles of it, there's a lot that doesn't get done.
Yeah.
And so,
depending upon this next election, you'll definitely have a friend in City Hall if Karen Bass wins. I know.
Oh, yeah. No, she's wonderful. Yeah, she really is. You know, yeah. And I'm hoping she does. I'm rooting for her really big time. I think she can do a lot of great things.
Me too. She's a good friend, and it's, you know.
Yeah. I don't know her person, but I know people that know her, and everybody says the most amazing things about her. You know, she lives right locally right here in CD10. She's right here in this neighborhood. Yeah. But the bigger, again, like I felt when I was at Cal Poly, I feel really good being a part of a bigger group of people. Again, there are about 30 of us on this CFAC committee who are very passionate about trees in our individual areas. And even outside of these meetings, we have each other's phone numbers, and I get a lot of phone calls from those members because I know trees and I'm a horticulturist. And so they'll see a picture of something in their neighborhood, or they'll take a picture of something in their neighborhood, and they'll send it to me and say, Brent, what's going on with this tree? What do you think we should do? And I advise them based on my knowledge.
Yeah.
But it's fun to have people that also are drawing off of each other to have a vision of greenery for the city, because LA needs it. I mean, we're having, you know, the price point here has gone through the roof. You know that. And
sure.
It continues to. And I think the quality of life, I mean, it's getting more dense. They're building more buildings, you know, more traffic. The counterweight to that is greenery. You have to do a balance of that, because every time they develop some big site, they remove a certain amount of
greenery. I was going to say there's less green, there's less dirt to put greenery in.
That's right. And then I was about to say, when they build back, there is less dirt to put greenery in. So how do you strategically add more greenery? And I think with the population being the size that it is, you know, and the traffic, street trees are probably one of the best way to make a big impact in an urban setting. Line every street with the appropriate trees, you know, that aesthetically make it look like you want to hang out on that street for pedestrian traffic, that type of thing. It cools it. It cuts down on the sound. You know, my neighborhood that you were asking me earlier, and I'm kind of jumping around.
No, my neighborhood
now has so many pedestrians that walk and push strollers and walk their dogs.
I know. When I was there, that was what I meant by the experience of like coming onto your neighborhood. What happened?
It's really interesting. All I did was plant the right tree, and I had 19 years to watch these trees mature.
Yeah.
And so those were the first trees that were planted. You know, the ones that I planted last year and the year before, they're a lot smaller, so it'll take time for them to grow in, because it's all about the time. But those first trees, my block is the bell of that neighborhood. It literally is the shadiest street over there. And people literally walk from all the different streets in my neighborhood on a hot day, because our street's the shadiest because of those trees.
Yeah.
And it was just an idea that I had, and it took root, no pun intended. But
I'm going to pull up, because you probably didn't bring any photos that you could put on the screen. And I know, given your technical prowess, you're not going to. But let me.
I know a lot of things. This tech is not my thing.
You know, that's all right. That is absolutely okay. So I'm going to share my screen a second.
Okay.
And you tell me if it's. You tell me if you.
Oh see. Yeah. Yep. That's okay, that's my backyard.
I know that's your backyard. So this is a before and after of your backyard. So when you moved in, this is the back of your house, and this was the yard.
Correct.
And then, you know, you put it, you
I did a little bit, a little something.
You punched out this and put in double doors here and double doors there. And I get that,
right.
But this is your backyard now. And, you know, speaking from personal experience, I wish I had more pictures of your backyard, but speaking from personal experience, that doesn't even come close to doing justice to how you, I mean, I suppose you could call it a yard. It is a yard, but it's like you walk into a room that is outside of a house.
But it's
a room that is part of a house. It's not the outside. It is outside, but it's extraordinary.
David, I appreciate that. You know, the thing is, my house, it's like I said, 1923 Spanish bungalow, 1,100 square feet, two bedroom, one bath.
Right.
But the lot is a pretty good size lot. The backyard being a decent sized backyard, And so my whole idea about that house when I bought it was make the backyard a private outdoor room and wall it in with greenery, you know, plant trees to give yourself shade and create areas that you'd want to hang out in. And so that has become literally the biggest room at my house.
And
so
it is, and it's so livable.
I use it daily. There's a hot tub back there. Several friends have gotten married back there. A lot of parties, music. I've got speakers back there, so I have my jazz going, the whole thing. But it literally is this livable space a block from the freeway, which you barely hear anymore because the trees muffle the sound of the freeway.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you just don't hear much.
And I'm just gonna go through, because some of these might be your house. I don't know. I actually
Well, that is a house up in the Hollywood Hills that was actually featured in Architectural Digest. I did all the landscaping for that house about 20 years ago. And I made that courtyard, and that house ended up in Architectural Digest.
That's the front of a house, yeah?
That's the front courtyard of a house. Yep, that's the front of that particular house.
Same house.
Once you walk through that little gated roof area there, you're in that courtyard that you just showed before. But this is what you see from the street. And so, yeah, that's really interior of that.
You plant this tree, or was it here?
That tree was actually there. It was really big and overgrown. And so I had a tree guy that works on my crew. He cleaned that tree up, and we sculpted it and scaffolded and made it really, you know, have a nice sculptural look to it. And then we designed the garden around that tree.
Really something.
Thank you.
And I mean, your work is, you know.
Thank you. That's a house in Hancock Park. We did boxwoods and roses and olive trees, and that's just a front yard of a home in Hancock Park.
And the choices you make about what kind of tree to plant, like, is there a reason you chose an olive tree as opposed to a God knows what? You know,
good question, David. You know, my thing is, since I generally work on residential properties, homes, when I'm doing the front yard is curb appeal. The backyard is where you live. And so that's kind of my philosophy. So the front yard architecturally tells you a plant palette. For example, like that house is a Tuscan villa. So I put in olive trees and Italian cypress and box hedges and that type of thing. And so I like to, my whole thing with architecture and plantings or any kind of style that you would incorporate into architecture, if you stay classic with what it is, it doesn't go out of style. If you put a bunch of fad stuff in, that's fad today, it may not age well because there's another fad. So I like to start with classic lines and classic things that enhance that classic architecture, whatever the style of the architecture may be. That's another home in Hancock Park.
I take it did not look like this when you started.
It did not look like that at all. In fact, it was just a little Spanish bungalow. And behind that hedge up there is a courtyard. For a master bedroom, so they can use that space, but they're not on display to the neighborhood. And then all of what you see that you're looking at in the picture, that's what you see when you drive by that house, just the exterior. And the landscaping beefed up that house, I think, in a good way.
That's beautiful.
Thank you. This is a backyard. No, this is a backyard that I did in Leimert Park. This particular client came to my house and liked elements of my own garden. And so we did a fountain for him, and we built that fireplace back at the back of the property out of broken concrete. We had to actually take up his old driveway to put a new one in because he had quite a bit of cracking in his old driveway. The old concrete was broken up. And so we took those pieces, mortared them together, and made that fireplace. So we recycled that material.
Magnificent.
Thank you.
It does have a flavor of your backyard.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, it has that, you know, but it's completely private. In fact, he's bordered all around him by regular single family houses like his own, but you don't see any of them.
Yeah.
And it's a room. It literally is a room back there. And so I love giving people an outdoor room experience, especially here in Los Angeles. I mean, you live where you live now and you see that cold temperature. LA, our weather is so amazing all year round. You can live outside. And then they have things now where you can add outdoor heating and lighting. And
Don't think that when we finally manage to get you here, we're not gonna ask you about how we can make this more private and
that'll be a challenge. We have to heat it. We have to heat it in the winter somehow. I guess you'll never use it in the winter, but when you can use it, you can
exactly.
Be pretty spacious.
But there is a you also include all these other elements that you know, you don't necessarily see that they're there, but they block the, they give privacy, you know, the buildings themselves. So if the plants were just, you know, they're, yeah, they will look a little shabby, but
yeah, but yeah. I really like, I guess livability in a space, an outdoor space, but also I always know that people won't use the space fully if they don't have privacy. I think like that's why you have rooms in your home, because they're interior rooms and they're your own personal space. Privacy is probably one of the biggest elements that I incorporate into my designs. And so with the plethora of plant material that's available here in Los Angeles, I mean, there's stuff that grows here from all around the world because of our climate, South Africa, things come from Australia, Brazil. There's so many things that can be used here. So it's like painting a picture. That house there, that's in Truesdale Estates up in Beverly Hills.
Oh, yeah.
A real formal Italian villa. And I designed this pool area.
Was the pool there?
The pool was there.
The pool was there.
In the landscaping I put in. The landscaping was not there. But I put in, you know, the urns at the end, all the symmetry, the formal lines and all of that to really accentuate this formal Italian villa architecture.
Really something. The stuff is just magnificent. And at the same time,
thank you.
I wish there was a way of communicating I'm gonna unshare here, but I wish there, unless there's something else to show that you want to.
That last picture is in the Palisades, Pacific Palisades.
This one.
The one with the larger pool that you.
Oh, this guy.
That one there. And over that, we did privacy hedges all around that property and built that fireplace, and there are homes all around there. There are homes bordering that whole property, but you can't see them because of all the greenery we introduced. So it makes the space private.
Unbelievable, really. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
I'm going to say this. I'm going to say it, and it's probably going to fall flat because it's all of this is magnificent to see, and none of it compares to that sense of the street, right? That you essentially transformed 19 years ago, 20 years ago, whatever it was that by planting those trees. I mean, it's just breathtaking. I mean, it's also so, you know, I don't mean there's not effort in it, but it's such a simple thought. It's such a simple idea, and to create that much magic, it's like it's like everybody should do this.
I believe that. I at least recently just started a nonprofit. It's interesting because now that these trees are maturing, it's a little hard to get the city to maintain them, even though they're on city property now, and the city has quote unquote adopted them because they're in their space.
Right.
Just the funding and the lack of follow up.
Right.
In the city, you just can't get stuff done. So I've put a lot of my own money into maintaining the trees, because when you don't maintain them, people do crazy things. They come out and they just start butchering things because they just don't know what to do. They just know it's a problem in the space because it's hanging too low or whatever it may be. And so I started a nonprofit, and it's called The Art of Green, and it's urban, Los Angeles urban tree maintenance. And I just started that. And so I'm going to, you know, wave my banner in the air and see if I can't get a little funding somewhere, because I'd like to direct some money toward the maintenance now that these trees are maturing. Yeah. Because, you know, things are, they're living, growing things. And, you know, in the scheme of a life of a tree, 20 years is not that long. I mean, I'm hoping that these things live to be, you know, long outlive me, obviously, and benefit the next generations of people, because, you know, that's what a tree should be able to do. You know, if you maintain it properly.
You know, it's gosh, I hope that you, first of all, you need to get your IT guy to send me, you know, a website I have, but Instagram account and this information about this nonprofit, so that it can be associated with the videos.
I'll even get him to send you a picture of the street.
Oh, that'd be great.
Because you need to see, and I'll see if I can find a before picture so you can see the difference.
That'd be great.
From the, because it makes such a difference. I mean, it's literally a different street.
Oh, it's, so it's extraordinary. I mean, it's just extraordinary. Yeah. And it's, and me saying that over and over again, does nothing to communicate just that, like, you feel like you're just transformed. It's like, yeah. I must have made a wrong turn because I'm not anywhere near where I just was.
That's the interesting thing. When they photographed my house for Sunset Magazine, the editor came. They were there for 2 days and the editor came. And she's this woman, she gets off the freeway, drives into my neighborhood, and she's in the backyard. And she's like, wait a minute, I was just on the freeway and on La Brea. Which way is west? I said, that way. She goes, where's the freeway? I go, that way. She goes, I'm so confused.
Yeah, exactly.
You leave the urban and you drive onto my street and you you're disoriented based on the canopy right. of trees. And that was deliberate. I literally chose Tipu tree for that because they give you a canopy, their roots are not a problem. They absorb pollution beautifully. Through the years, I've been trimming those trees on my own and my hands are black. I don't like using gloves, but they absorb all the pollution and that rubs off on my hands. But we'd be breathing that otherwise.
Right, exactly.
You know? And just the aesthetics, the practicality from the breathing standpoint, the sound, the fact that it muffles the sound from the freeway.
Yeah.
And provides, say, there's so many reasons to plant urban street trees. So
you know, there's a group here, I think they call themselves the Homestead Group, whatever. Because apparently a problem in Wyoming, where I am right now, so they had planted years and years and years ago ash trees, and they lined the streets.
Oh, those are beautiful.
And I don't know if it was a disease that came, or I don't think it's just the age of the tree, but they're all dying.
And you know, that can happen.
You can watch them, you can sort of spot the ones that are going, et cetera. So this group, this guy, one particular guy, Josh Pomeroy, who I would love to have on this podcast, actually, is trying to start this group. And he started, what they'll do is for nothing. And no, I think it's, I believe it's for nothing. All you have to do is ask for a tree.
Hmm.
And they will, they'll choose the right sort of tree for the right sort of location, and they will plant the tree and make sure to maintain it for the first year.
That's great.
So it's, and they struggle to get people to do
commit
it.
To it.
And for here, it's a free tree.
Yeah.
So they're trying to raise money for the trees planting and volunteers take care. And it's kind of an extraordinary thing that people would say, nah, I don't think so. It's like, what?
I think the bigger picture, even with climate change and all this buzz and, green and all this stuff, so many people just really don't understand how important it is and how simple it is. Like you said, of all the things that you can do, like you can't reduce traffic. Traffic's going to be what it is, right? Buildings are going to be what they are. Paved streets are going to be what they are, whatever. Trees are such a simple thing to add. I mean, if you polled people in an urban environment, I guarantee you people would probably strongly say that they love walking on a tree-lined shaded street, because I don't poll people, but I watch it in my neighborhood. I mean, the streets like my street that's lined, they're markedly used more than other streets, mm-hmm. because they are that insulated canopy and they're cool. When it's 80 degrees, they're 60 degrees because it's cooler, or whatever it is, or 70 degrees, but they're extremely comfortable, And so, but I think it's hard to get people to understand the science behind it.
Well, it's also, I think there's an element of, you plant this little tree and now I'm supposed to wait how long before I feel it right away? It's like, there's that thing about, we're immediate.
People want the immediate gratification.
Like, come on. Yeah. And so it's like, yeah, okay, plant a tree, whatever, whatever. But, but when you see it, when you see it, it's
amazing.
And you're right. It's going to go on. I mean, the hope is, right, it'll go on for years, long after you're gone from wherever that is.
Yeah, that's the other reward of, being a landscape designer for 30 years. I've got trees that I planted 30 years ago. And some of the houses have different residents there now because people have moved or whatever. But those trees are still there. And so I'll walk by or drive by and see this towering thing that I actually dug a hole for in my 20s and planted. And now in my 50s, I'm looking at this thing going, wow, look at it. You know, yeah. It's really cool. I mean, it's nice to be in a place as long as I've been and be able to drive around and actually see things having matured. And they're still not as mature as they're going to be at some point.
Sure.
They've still got time to go. But I really believe in it, David. I think it's...
Oh, my God. It's so obvious, and you should, and so should everybody else. And that's why that's like, you know, I want the city to be, you know, clamoring at your door saying, okay, we need your help figuring out how to fix this neighborhood or whatever. And then the city down the block down there.
Yeah. Well, what they do is, you know, funding in these municipalities, you know, they earmark a certain amount of funding annually for stuff. You know what I mean? And so they may earmark a bunch of money to plant a bunch of trees. I know during Villaraigosa's time, he had a million tree LA initiative. He planted all these trees. And then after he was out of office, they cut a lot of funding. So the trees didn't get the maintenance.
Right.
A lot of them didn't get the watering or whatever he had set up. And so if it changes, I mean, it's a commitment. You need to commit at least for the first 5 years and hopefully plant, you know, ecologically sustainable trees that are drought tolerant and that can survive in an urban environment. You don't want to plant high maintenance stuff that gives you a problem because somebody will take it out eventually because, you know, that can happen. But if you're really thoughtful and you know, draw on people that have experience with this stuff to help you select varieties that are just going to benefit, you can't go wrong. I don't think.
Yeah.
You know? I don't think.
Well, that person ought to be you. It's just as all.
I'm working on it, and I have.
I think it's inspiring, and I mean, I really do. I think it, you know, you and I know there are other people around that do that that are committed in that way. Putting your own time, energy, effort, and resources into that. It's just, it's so, you know, I get choked up thinking about it. So I love it.
Well, I appreciate it. You know, what's been interesting lately, you know, I'm getting a little older and digging a bunch of holes, digging 54 holes.
Don't start with the older.
Well, David, you're going to be eternally young. We all know that about whatever water you're drinking. We all want a glass of that because whatever you're doing is working. But what I've done is as of late, the past couple of years, a really dear friend of mine, Mario Johansson, works at New Roads, and we've engaged. New Roads is a private school.
Mario's done this podcast as well.
Right. And so he's been good enough to share some of the students for community service projects to come and plant my trees for the past 3 years. And what's been really great about that is it's a young generation of very young, excited kids that have all this energy. And they're going to be the next generation to inherit this urban forest, right? So it's good to get them when they're young so that they can really understand the benefits. And as they get into their adulthoods, raise families, they move into communities and want to preach that same gospel and keep that going. So it's important.
I agree.
Yeah.
Well, so this may be a good time to stop, but I don't know. What else you want to speak about? Anything else you want to make sure to speak about?
I will, if there are young people watching this or listening to this, you know, I was one of those fortunate people that had a passion about something. If you have a passion, do it.
Yeah.
Find a way to do it and make it be your life's work. I mean, you have to work in your life. Make it be something that you can get up and be excited for.
Yeah.
And I do that. And
you still are.
I'm still doing it. I'm very thankful that I have that that ability to be able to do that.
So. And did you remember to thank your dad for like telling you, hey, dude, don't be a lawyer?
Well, I thank him all the time. And my dad's 87. He'll be 87 in April. He's got some health issues, strokes and that kind of thing, but he's still here and we talk. And I thank him all the time. Then I have a 21-year-old daughter, you know, who I've also introduced to plants and that kind of thing. So she's into it. And it's nice. It really is. And in fact, the garden on Orange Drive, she was 3 years old when I planted that garden. So she's 21 now and she's been able to grow up in that garden. Mm. And, you know, see, there are tangerine trees out there. She's out there singing and humming, eating tangerines. That's pretty cool. It makes me happy. I get choked up when I see her out there, you know, enjoying her garden. So it's a lot of fun for me.
Yeah. Well, Brent, I'm so glad that I'm so glad you're in my life, and I'm so glad that you are willing to come on this podcast, and I'm so glad that you're doing what you're doing, man. So,
David, I'm honored, and I really appreciate you asking me to be on. It's always an honor to talk with you, and you're wonderful, man. Thank you.
Okay.
You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.